On this program, Henry Davis from the Native Arts and Literature Conference at Sitka and Supreme Court Justice Robert Boochiever from the 3rd Bush Justice Conference at Kenai. I'm Mo Osley and welcome to Potlatch. One of the workshops at the conference in Sitka last December addressed the topic of education. Henry Davis told how the Indians of Cake in southeast Alaska initiated compulsory education in 1924.
Somewhere around 1924, those people, those men, could hardly read. But still they realize that these children must be educated. They've made their own rule that we must stay in the village. They created their own compulsory education law or ordinance or whatever you may call it. Now from there on, we had to stay in the village. Our parents no longer take us out to camps. One of the men who was responsible to push that, what we call compulsory education for the children, decided to move. He was taking his children out. Their own law reads that every time a child is out of school, it's $5 for each child. And this man had 4 children. He brought his things down the beach, and the policeman they have, he went down and said, "Charlie, if you take your children out, this is going to be $20 a day for you." We kept our eyes on all his things down there on the beach because we knew that sometimes those things, if they're brought up, he might put us to work. And that means maybe a nickel or a dime for me. And so we kept our eyes on all his things. And it laid there for about an hour, maybe 2 hours. And the whole village watched to see if he's going to move out. And finally, some of his children came down and they start packing up some of the things. And then he said, "All right, will you help me?" And that's what we wanted. We want to be hired. We say hired because I know I'm going to get a dime out of it. But the thing is, it's not much of a law. If you read that ordinance, it's a lot of fun to read them, you know, just how they're written. But still, those people abide by it. Now, this is our history of compulsory education. Where I've been going to school for about 3 months out of a school year, I start going to school the whole school year, not just myself but the rest of the children. And you know, I admired those people for doing that. I came back from college, and because I was an Indian, I had to start off as an apprentice teacher, all for a big salary of $74 a month. And if you graduate right alongside of me, you're a full-fledged teacher. But because I'm an Indian, I'll be an apprentice teacher. I know I taught with a man who was just a banker. He has very little idea of education or what education is about. I supposed to be learning something about teaching from him, but I'm pretty sure he learned some teaching from me instead. And we said a while ago there were some barriers of the Bureau of Indian Affairs school and the territorial school. When some of our students want to go to the territorial school that tell us, well, you have your own school, you go back to your own school.
If you're looking for a place you can fly together, and you're really afraid of what you're leaving behind, take the easiest road, but take care, my brother, for you'll never find peace with a troubled mind. Far better to love each other than to worry so deeply about the place you're.
After the war, in 1944, we thought that there is still discrimination in our education system, where the Bureau of Indian Affairs maintains schools for the Indians and territorial school for the whites. Over at CAKE, we tried hard to get a new school. It gives you an idea how old that building is, from 1940 to 1944. And so we figured this is one way of getting a new school. And so I went to Juneau. I went on a boat that was going after furniture and other things. I had a free ride. The city gave me all of $10 for my expense. And when we landed in Juneau, the man said, I don't want anybody living on the boat. I thought I'd stay on the boat and save hotel expense. But there I was with all of $10 from the city. I had to move up to the hotel. And then we were storm bound. I went up to the area director's office. And right away, this area director, Don Foster, he's a little bit of a fella. He said hello, and I said hello. He asked me, what are you doing in town? I put everything down in front of him. We expected help from him, and we expected help from the territorial school also. And so I told him, we're going to start a move and break away from the BIA. We'd like to become the territorial school. Now, this is February of 1944. And you know, he said, this is the exact topic we're talking about. He dashed out and he yelled at Dr. Ryan, will you come in here? I think we have our man over here. And so he came back, he introduced me, and this is what we were talking about. They're going to use metlakatla as a test case, but they refused. And so he said, here's one man that wanted to do just exactly what they planned was to just gradually move away from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And eventually they realized that all the schools will be territorial school. Now we have state schools. At that time, it was territorial. And so we sat around for about two days, and everything was arranged. We have an agreement with the BIA that they're giving us the whole building, the whole thing, the desks and everything. And for school taxes, for 3 years, they're going to help us with the school taxes until we got on our feet. And this is the first village to break away from the territorial school.
Said my prayer, prayed like hell to get out of there. When I was a boy at the age of six, they took me out to get me fixed 5 years. He's been at the bars, dear old teacher, read the charge. Principal looked down at me, said, boy, don't fuck at democracy. Anything you say, anything you do before we hereby sentence you. You get 1 year for climbing trees, you get another one for catching bees, 1 year for spontaneity, you get another one for curiosity, 1 year for exploration, you get another one for imagination, 1 year for exuberance, you get another one for innocence, 2 years for ingenuity, you serve them all consecutively.
Willie Dunn. The third annual Bush Justice Conference recently met at Kenai and heard Justice Robert Boochiever of the State of Alaska Supreme Court. He reviewed the history of the justice system in rural Alaska and told the story of a hunter.
I'm reminded of a story of a fellow who loved to hunt, and his whole life was centered around hunting and fishing, and every chance he had, he'd go out hunting. And one day he was hunting, and it was a beautiful day. He was all by himself, and he looked up in the heavens, and he just thought out loud. He spoke out loud his thoughts and said, I wonder what it's like up there. And a voice came down from the heavens and said, I've got some good news and bad news for you. He said that the good news is that there are rolling fields here. It's just full of game. There are herds of caribou, there are moose, they're deer, they're walrus, every kind of game you can imagine. And the bad news is you're scheduled up here for a hunt next Monday. Well, in reviewing the history of the court system and the village justice system, We originated with the system that was in effect before statehood, with the U.S. commissioners and deputy commissioners serving in the rural areas. We were just talking about the Coast Guard cutter that went to many of the villages. In fact, Roy Madsen was talking about trying to revive that and having a big cruiser out of Kodiak. But I don't think that the administrative director, Art Snowden, will approve that. But the system was basically politically oriented. The appointments of the commissioners were made on a political basis, and their payment was based on the amount of fees they received. Well, with statehood, that was changed, and we inaugurated the magistrate system, and we now have 58 to 60 magistrates, depending upon whether all the positions are filled, in the villages throughout the state. The magistrates are appointed by the presiding judges, and they are salaried. The judges, in making the appointments, always go to, at least they do now, always go to the villages, consult with the villages, and get the input from the people who live there in trying to make appointments that will be suitable for the particular areas involved. As you know, in most of the villages that are predominantly native villages, the magistrates are natives. The jurisdiction of the magistrate covers a very wide area, and they are really the backbone of the judicial system in our smaller places. They have civil jurisdiction of up to $1,000. In criminal jurisdiction, there are two types of cases generally. Felonies, which are cases where the sentence is maybe over 1 year, and misdemeanors, where the sentence is less than a year. Well, the magistrates may try misdemeanors with the consent of the parties, and they may accept pleas of guilty in misdemeanor cases, and then have the important function of sentencing those who have committed the crime. They also may enforce municipal ordinances. In the more serious felony cases, they take care of the important initial steps, the arraignment when the person is brought before a judge, when he is told his rights and explained his rights, when he enters a plea of guilty or not guilty, and in setting bail and the conditions of bail, whether he is to be released, whether he is to pay a sum of money, the conditions of release until his trial. They also handle preliminary hearings where there is evidence produced to see if there is reason to hold that person for prosecution under the charge. They also handle a wide variety of other functions, including that of the coroner, investigating death cases, handling of marriages, absentee ballots, and many cases the magistrates are especially appointed as masters to handle children's cases.
Winter boy. A snowy day came to me on a rainy afternoon. And there'd been summer love, love I trusted far too well, gone away, and winter's spell had broke my heart and left me all alone and looking for a home to rest my weary heart for just a while. And I found it in the smile of a boy, a little boy with midnight in his hair and promise in his eyes of days and nights still yet to be. Days and nights he'd cling to me, for I am winter's lady, and he is winter's child. Though there be summers yet, and the smell of pine comes crying to my heart, Still my joy and my security will lie beside the boy of blessed purity, the little boy with midnight in his hair and diamonds in his eyes. Diamonds made of trust and love for me and gleaming at me all.
One of the major problems of the justice system in the rural areas is the fact that we do not have adequate quarters and adequate facilities in each of the communities. With this in mind, a few years ago, we were able to secure, through again an LEAA grant, 13 modular facilities that had detention facilities and office space for the magistrates and a small courtroom. And those have worked out, I believe, quite well. The court system supervised the installation of those facilities, and we found that it wasn't quite as simple to put up a modular home in an outlying village as it is in the outskirts of Anchorage. But I think most of them have now had all of the problems worked out, and they're functioning very well. There are, however, a shortage of facilities, and we need others in other communities. We do have a new courthouse that is going up in Bethel under a lease arrangement with the city, and Judge Gwynn advises me that that building now is ready to have the roof on it, so it should be ready for occupancy very shortly. Probably the most pressing need for a new facility is at Barrow. One of the steps that has been done to bring the justice system to the outlying areas and to better service them has been the concept of having service areas. And this was initiated at Bethel with a Superior Court judge visiting there once a week during the month, and also at Barrow, where a Superior Court visits from Fairbanks. We are very pleased now that in Bethel, the legislature has authorized a Superior Court judge. A program which we thought was going to be of great benefit was the Court Interpreter Program, which was handled through the Kuskokwim Community College at Bethel. We trained interpreters who understood the Yupik language and could then receive training in legal terms and could translate from Yupik to English and back again and help in the understanding of the justice system. I'm informed and was saddened to hear that these interpreters have not been used to date to any extent, and I certainly hope that we will avail ourselves of their services and that the program can be broadened. One of the programs that's been inaugurated and which I'm sure most of you are familiar with and have been following with interest as I have is the Village Conciliation Board. This is a program that was endeavoring to adopt the traditional means in villages of resolving disputes to our present judicial system. Boards of local residents were selected, and people could voluntarily bring their disputes before them and have them settled more in the traditional manner that disputes were settled in the villages in the past. We're watching those programs very carefully with a view towards expanding them if they prove to be sufficiently feasible. The Supreme Court of Alaska over the years has been very sensitive to village problems, starting with the well-known Alvarado decision that was made by the late Chief Justice, authored by the late Chief Justice Boney in 1971. It held that a defendant had a right to be tried in the community near where the crime occurred. Prior to then, people were brought in from remote villages to Anchorage or Fairbanks to be tried by juries that had no sympathy with their problems, no understanding of their cultural background. And this was changed by the Alvarado decision. In another case, Agachak against Montgomery Ward, a case which I authored, we held that a suit which was brought in Anchorage under a small claim and which a defendant was served in Scammon Bay, requiring him to appear at Anchorage to answer the complaint, was invalid because they had to provide that the person who got the complaint could answer in writing and could have the right to have the case transferred to a location near his own home. And in our small claims rules, we have adopted similar principles to make sure that the cases are brought where the people are when there is justification for that, instead of dragging a person from a remote village into a big city to answer a case for a $500 debt. Another case of significance, or two of them really, were the Aleut decision of 1975 and the Kachemak Bay decision of this year, which required the state to consult with local communities and their planning boards, if they had planning agencies, before the state would enter into contracts for the sale of land near those communities or the lease of land or oil rights in those areas. Again, the effort is made to have local input, to bring the law and bring the decisional functions back to those communities. In a recent case, the Gregory case, it was held that a defendant who had limited understanding of English must be explained to in great detail his right to an attorney, and that the judge must make sure that he understands that right before accepting a plea of guilty. Now, I think that all of these aspects have been looking towards greater local control in the judicial system, greater input from those in the local communities.
Listening to the Neon Philharmonic. I'm Mo Wasley, and thank you for listening to Potlatch.
Potlatch is produced by KUAC under Title I of the Higher Education Act.